Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I had a couple of WhatsApp exchanges I wanted to share. Several people have told me that Bill Clinton is the governor of a state called Arkansas, not a town or a city. And let me make that apology at the outset. He had a history with black people before he ran for president. He had many black friends from his time at Oxford University, a strong connection with the black population in Arkansas. He had a strong connection with elected blacks in Capitol Hill. His best friend was a black man in Arkansas in the 1950s and 60s that saw the taboo of the Jim Crow South. Mayor Pete has a problem with the black community in South Bend because he fired a black police chief. And the black fired, black police chief and the, oh, sorry, he fired a black police chief and the black fire chief. The problem for him anyway is anybody who's running for the Democratic nomination must get a majority black vote or they will be whipping a dead horse. So my question is, are black people likely to vote for Donald Trump in exchange for Mayor Pete? Donald Trump, who is widely renowned to be racist, and certainly if you look at the Muslim ban, which is currently being challenged constitutionally, that speaks to his racial inclinations. As distinct from a person who has fired a fire chief and a police chief for circumstances that I have no knowledge of one way or the other. But it continues to be an interesting point. Peter, you seem to dismiss Mike Bloomberg as a viable candidate. To me, only Biden or Bloomberg can beat Trump. The American press speaks about electability. While I believe Mayor Pete and Warren are good candidates, I don't believe that the American said he is ready for a woman or a gay man as president. Any of the two will only serve to energize Trump's base. Interesting point. I have to admit I have never been a huge fan of Bloomberg, largely because I guess I doubt the extent to which he's genuine. But I do agree that he clearly has been spending enough money that he ought to be taken seriously. The challenge is that when you're spending the kind of money that he's spending and you're not in the top four just yet, it raises questions as to your viability. Okay, down to brass tacks. Good.
Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing? Patrick?
This is Patrick.
How is life?
You know, life is wonderful. You know, Peter, I've got to be very careful now when I'm speaking to you. Because of some individuals who seem to want to, I don't know what the motive behind their actions, right? Because when I last spoke to you, I said when I started to speak to you that I want to wish you a prosperous 2020.
Okay, I thank you.
Some people, I said that to you on the last occasion, which is before last.
Mm-hmm. I recall that, yeah.
Right. So, and then I get jacked up by other people calling to question my Christianity and how I can be congratulating you on your wedding. We had no discussion, no such discussion.
I don't recall we did. I read something online, but as you said, you call and you move straight to the thing. I ain't the problem.
Precisely, but I just wanted to admit.
I think you and I will continue to have debates on matters of national importance. my marriage precisely. Is not a matter of national importance, really.
Precisely.
Much as I would like to think it could be, but you know.
I want to speak to you, Peter, on this whole issue because you see, when the Dems don't got anything to do, they like to come after me, right? Mm-hmm. So I am happy when they do that because it put me in a frame of mind where I give me the ability to expose them.
Well, if the Dems fight with you for the next 3-4 years, then it gives Prime Minister the opportunity to get on with business, and then we'll just continue fighting with you because you're running in the election. So
precisely. Now, I'm speaking, Peter, now pertaining to the nonsense that I hear coming from some quarters about this whole issue of quarantine and paragon. I guess you would have seen me and back and forth on my page with this whole nonsense. And I believe that we must put the matter to rest. The government, I support the government's approach. You understand me? I have nothing to do with what the press had to say, because the press have been doing a job to do in relation to that. The thing is that if persons arrive in the country, Peter, from origins or destinations that individuals are were or is affected by the coronavirus, you don't think that the chief medical officer has a fiduciary responsibility to the citizens of this country, that if he's uncertain, that you vet these individuals, Peter. And if you can vet them, you can't vet them by keeping them at the airport. So if you find a location to put them while you're vetting them, what's the issue? What's the issue in the country? Because you can't vet them at the airport. Because you still got other travelers coming in and going out of the airport. So it's this nonsense you run over social media about the government need to come clean about people in quarantine, pardon. It's a nonsense. And I don't understand for the life of me how sensible, right thinking people that pride themselves of a literacy rate, 99% or something so, that they posted this foolishness and creating panic and fear in the country over nonsense, Peter. It is foolishness. And the Prime Minister must take a director from the Chief Medical Officer in his capacity, professional capacity, that is. But if he directs the Prime Minister in what they think should be done, the Prime Minister speaks down based on the information received. So I don't understand the foolishness. The next thing I want to deal with is the whole issue of free Wi-Fi both in our primary schools and secondary schools. Because you see the problem with the Dems, right, is that they got the garbage to talk, the motor to talk about, they got the buses to talk about, the more they got the roads to cover, everything that they talk about, the Prime Minister put it, she happens. So they got nothing to talk about. Mm. So that's what got the Mr. Trevor. Right? Now, I want to deal with this free Wi-Fi in both our primary schools and secondary schools. I believe that we have reached the stage in this country where, because the dynamics of the world has changed, where I believe that our young children, all primary schools and secondary schools, to have access, free access to Wi-Fi. I hear the talk about watching porn and watching this and doing that and doing the next and third. But what some people fail to understand, Peter, is that the children can do the same thing at home. They don't want to wait till they come to school to do it. Right? I do not believe that we should deprive our young children in the age of technology from this whole thing of creating technological space in the primary and secondary schools for them. This nonsense with a teacher backing children from a blackboard, I think that it has its place, but I think that has long...
I think it hasn't. It doesn't hasn't had its place for a long time.
You understand? I say it now as foolishness.
It's like writing on a slate.
Precisely, because we can't want to fix issues in the third decade of the 21st century with old ideology thinking. We got to move forward. You understand me? And I don't believe our children should be deprived of it. I believe that the Minister of Education and the Ministry of Education should seriously consider the use of technology, both not only for students, but also teachers alike in both our secondary and primary school.
Yeah, I agree with you, Patrick.
Because that academia, Peter, is not the only thing that a lot of children going to school are interested in. And if little Bobby is interested in the whole fallacy of a computer and how it works and that kind of thing, and this way he wants to focus his interest, I don't believe somebody should be confusing him about 2 and 2 is 6, 2 and 2 is 4, and 3 2s is 6. That's rubbish. If that's what little Johnny is not interested in, I believe that you should let him focus his attention where he's in and become better than that is
especially since there's a computer that could work out 2 and 2 and 4 and 4 far more easily than he ever could. So
precisely the point. And you can Google almost anything.
Yeah.
Almost anything. Why would we?
You know your times table, Patrick.
Well, I can't remember. I can't remember it, Peter. To be quite honest, but if I Google it, I can find it, though.
I know the 1, the 2, and the 10.
But the point I'm making, Peter, the point I'm making is that we had the same conversation over the level plus, you know, because we got some people believe that there should be like the scribes and the Pharisees of old. The police tradition. Mm. And I don't believe that, I believe that some traditions may have its place, all of them cannot fit within the sphere, because of the new realm and new technological age. They cannot.
Yeah. Patrick, I'm in full agreement with you on that point. You know that I would always support those arguments. We need to have change in the context of the secondary and the primary schooling system. And the idea of free Wi-Fi zones are, I think that is in line with it. In the last election, there was a proposal by the Labour Party in the UK to make Wi-Fi free, period. And I think that there are tremendous benefits. You would recall when Prime Minister Motley was in the opposition, she got into a consortium with Lime and a few other sponsors, and the idea was to make the Greater Bridgetown area a Wi-Fi free zone by encouraging people to unlock their Wi-Fi to allow individuals to pass seamlessly from one network to the other. And I think that there's still, to me, a lot of logic in that kind of arrangement. So I do feel that she is technologically inclined, certainly more so than any other leader that we have had in the past. And I think that she would take kindly to that kind of initiative to ensure that all the schools are connected. Personally, I thought that they all were. I didn't realize that some of them weren't.
But I used to go to schools all the time and see a Wi-Fi zone that open. All public schools have free Wi-Fi. The last thing I want to speak to on is this whole issue of transportation, because you referenced it in your preamble. Mm-hmm. Peter, I believe that we can look going forward, and I get a lot of lip further on my page, but I can still discuss it, right? I believe that we can seriously look at the pain of tolls coming into Bridgetown. We can determine the times from 6 a.m.
Congestion charging.
Precisely, because if you don't have any reason to be in town, and you must be in town, then pay to go in Bridgetown. It's simple. And I also believe, Peter, that before the government can approach that what we need to do is put a reliable park and ride system in place at strategic locations where you can park your vehicle, get onto a bus or coach or whatever that heading into Bridgetown. And you go into Bridgetown, and when you finish with what you're doing in Bridgetown, you get back onto the coach and go back to
your vehicle. Patrick, the thought you're coming with is good talk, but you know why I have a difficulty with you with that argument is that I really think the problem is not in Bridgetown anymore. There was a time when the problem was Bridgetown. I think the problem is really Warren's. Precisely then, if you're going to do congestion charging, which is popularly known as, you have to do congestion charging in the Warren's area, you have to do it in the Sergeant's Village area, and then you have to do it along aspects of the South Coast as well. I would say that in the Rendezvous area. Those are the town centers that have developed in Barbados. Spice don't get there yet, but you know, they will catch up. Maybe in Six Crossroads, in St. Philip. But to me, you need to start thinking about congestion charging in those kinds of places, because doing it in Bridgetown ain't gonna help, because the vast majority of us don't have no desire or need to go to Bridgetown other than to catch a bus in the first place. And that's a part of the problem now, that Bridgetown has been abandoned for all intents and purposes by people. Anyhow, last response from you, and then we're going to go.
No, but if the government do a traffic management assessment, mm-hmm. I believe that will help guide the process and help them to better understand what it is that they think they need to do in order to fine-tune this whole madness that's going on mm-hmm. in the country. When 2:30 and 3 o'clock, you can't get from one part of Barbados to the next mm-hmm. within a short space of time. You're talking 2 hours and an hour and a half on the road sitting down in traffic. It's mm-hmm. nonsense. Okay. We need to fix it.
Yeah. Right. All right, thanks a lot for calling. I have a couple of reminders. My friend Rosemary is asking me why am I discussing American politics and got so much issues but here to discuss. Gotta diversify things a little bit, shaking them up. And the callers seem to be enjoying the conversation. First poll coming in, and I believe this is what they call like a morning consult poll, puts Sanders at 25%, Biden at 22%, Warren at 11%, Bloomberg at 7%, and Buttigieg at 11%. So Buttigieg is tied with Warren at 11. So the three leading candidates at this stage would be Sanders at 25, Biden at 22, and Bloomberg at 7. The point being made here is that Bloomberg is actually doing better than I would have suggested that he was. So the WhatsApper is essentially suggesting to me that I need to keep an eye on Bloomberg in a way that I wasn't. My assumption is that Bloomberg was really not polling that well. But the reality, based on what I am seeing here from one source, is he doesn't have the source of the poll, puts Bloomberg at number 3, suggesting that he is a candidate that is leading. Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Mike Bloomberg. Yeah, it's the same poll here that I'm seeing from another source, which is an interesting point. Donna Brastocks, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
The debate about this vote, man married to man and ladies.
There's a debate?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of talk. It's a lot of talk.
Okay.
Locally.
I didn't realize that there was a debate.
Yeah. but I take that.
I thought debate was on American politics.
I think everybody got the money to do that. If a man want to do that, he could. And I ain't got a problem with that. Men and women could do the same thing. Do the same thing. Is the law passed or the civic capacity do?
Yeah. I think so. But
mostly because we're from a Christian society, that would be a hard thing to deal with.
But no.
People look at.
Yeah. But the right to same-sex marriage exists in countries that are as Christian as Barbados.
Exactly.
The majority of the countries in the world, United States, United Kingdom, they are all Christian societies too, largely. Ireland, all across Europe, but still, they recognize it. The important point is that marriage is not a Christian institution. Marriage is essentially a secular institution, and the state essentially says that if two people want to pursue a secular union, they should be able to do so. If the religious grouping does not want to offer their blessing, they're entitled also not to do so, to withhold it, but that the state should not withhold that benefit. So.
But even Obama, as a black president, even Obama agree with that, don't you?
Well, in a sense, he did. But remember, Obama struggled initially, and then he had a Damascus moment, where he decided that he had evolved into supporting gay marriage. But initially when he went in, he did not. He supported gay rights. But the marriage thing was a corner that he turned, just before the second election that he was facing. And some people argued because he realized that there was a demographic he needed to respond to that wanted to hear that. But I do agree that he supported it eventually and he evolved in that regard. But yeah, it's a challenge for the Christian community. And actually, while we're on that point, just let me remind you that the lecture comes off tonight at the Frank Collymore Hall, I believe, on not necessarily same-sex marriage, but the lecture really is about rights and so on. Let me just give you the full details. They call the Christian Faith in the Public Square, Justice, Compassion, and Humility, and the individual in question is the Dean of Kingston. So at 7:30, Frank Collymore Hall, you're welcome to come if you want to discuss issues of this nature or hear a perspective of the church on issues of this nature.
Okay, one more area that I want to look at. Have you looked at the areas from the roundabout to the old hospital right down to the stoplight, down by the church? And you mind that's an ugly area. I can't understand how that get to be a heritage site.
You talking about by the old IWAR?
Exactly. All that area want tearing down, all the area from.
Nah, but sir, you really look at that welfare, the old welfare building, the IWAR building?
All that there.
But sir, you can't tear down that building. That's one of the most beautiful buildings in Bridgetown.
Okay, all right.
You seeing it in terms of what it is, or you seeing it in terms of what it can become?
Okay, all right. Cut it short. Leave the award, but you see, all the back. I will leave. What I will do? I will leave the old hospital as a heritage area.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, all the back of the area, all that back there is a lot of fills. All that there should be should be a park area for the people in St. Michael, especially. That should, if you renovate our trees and make it like a park with skaters and such like, that will. But they will be more beautiful.
I don't disagree with you that there are opportunities to beautify that area because there are some derelict buildings that could come down. But as you say, I would object strongly to anybody touching the I ward. If I had a piece of change, honestly, that's a building that I would buy and do something with. Because it's a beautiful building. It has a lot of history. I love the arch that you can drive into. And then in the back, you have this fantastic beach.
Right. Skip a couple areas. But yeah. one more area that I dealing with. You see, why is it you put down some trees that's a beautiful Browns Beach, and all of a sudden disappear, and you come and tell me that the lifeguards can't see. That's one of the most silly statements that I ever hear.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell me that the lifeguards can't see, so that was them demolish the trees that put down some beautiful coconut trees when town area really want trees.
Mm-hmm.
That area there is a kind of like a desert. In what a Browns Beach, like a desert. That should be built up with trees. The lifeguards should have come. They should have come out. If they got two here, they got one lifeguard, one side, and one station in that. You got mm-hmm. two areas.
Mm-hmm.
You that's a poor excuse that you could come and tell the authorities that them can't see, so to remove the trees.
Right.
it's like you telling the authorities listen to people that. I would say that we're hot on the feet.
We're hot on the feet.
Yeah. Who then listen to? But that's all I can say.
Just bear in mind though that I understand where you're coming from. The development of Bridgetown and that area coming out of Bridgetown has to take into consideration the maintenance of this World Heritage Site concept. But it also has to take into consideration that they got a lot of buildings in between there that want tearing down, you know, that just really are not serving a useful purpose and that are ugly. And, you know, the first one I would start with is Miss Round Building.
Exactly.
I hear people talking about history, but what history is that? The building is a mess and it's right on the road.
All that area they want clear and deep. And one more thing, please tell the authorities, don't mind the jokers and put back the trees and plant more trees all around by sea and all mm-hmm. that area. Tell them mm-hmm. put back trees.
All right.
That's it.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. A lot of support for Bloomberg. One of my friends from Miami just messaged me and told me that he will be the candidate. So I have to admit, I am watching him more closely than I was. I had completely written him off. These numbers seem to be suggesting that he is in with a pretty good chance. He has the money. If the public has the interest, then it may very well be a goal. Two billionaires battling it out for leadership of the United States of America will make for a very interesting contest. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. The gentleman writes and he says, the guy's name is Michael. Peter, it's amazing that supposedly intelligent black people always hate the people who have helped them and love the people who persecute them. So many people, like Peter Wickham, hate the Republican Party in the United States, which fought to free slaves and gave African Americans most of their rights and were the first to have African Americans in public positions in office. On the other hand, blacks love the Democratic Party, the party of the United States, the party that fought for blacks to remain as slaves. Is the party of the Ku Klux Klan, is the party of Jim Crow laws. Educated blacks are so idiotic and ignorant. Do you know their history? And it is shameful. And I think, Michael, your position is an unfortunate one. The idea of defining history in a stagnant way is something that I find absurd. If we were to take this conversation to the level of Barbados, it is akin to saying that if I supported Grantley Adams because he brought universal adult suffrage to Barbados, then I cannot see myself voting for another political party. And I say this as a person who was once a member of the Democratic Labor Party because there were progressive aspects in the organization that I identified. The reality of politics, however, sir, is that things change. Somewhere around the 1970s, the Republican Party started being less progressive and the Democratic Party started being more progressive. And that's just the way that the pendulum swings sometimes. So I don't really think anybody is stupid for not observing history. History is what it is. But the point is that the Democratic Party was the party that brought the first black president. And I think it is the party that is considered a more progressive organization. No, it was the party that brought Social Security to the United States, as I understand it. And it is a party that is generally identified with more progressive thought. So you have to take your head out of history, even though we understand it. But I reject this idea that politics is something that will always remain the same. Another person is saying, Peter, I really cannot take this creation story nonsense, and I would like it off the air. I have to admit, sir, that like you, I have some reservations about it, but ultimately, one has to accept that persons like yourself and myself appear to be in a minority in this world. If somebody has the capacity to pay for advertising, they put it on the air, and it's as simple as that. It is simple. Mike Bloomberg has put out a campaign ad with President Obama that appears to be an endorsement without saying it. Now Bloomberg is surging because of that ad. There's no definitive proof that President Trump is a bona fide billionaire. Remember, we certainly haven't seen his financial records or taxes of late. Peter Michael is dated and clearly doesn't know the facts. The supporters have switched in the 60s over the civil rights movement. Peter, I like Joe Biden. You are welcome. Dr. Brastox, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Peter. Good morning. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Okay. I would like to talk about education with you for a few moments.
Sure.
I don't know if you would agree with me in some of my ideas, but we'll see. I want to know when we change from 11 plus, where our measurement will come from, our standards. I have been watching the Nordic countries and their approach to education, as well as their social layout for their citizens when they lose work and stuff like that. I certainly think it's a model that we can learn from and tweak for our benefit, you know, to fit our situation. But definitely, I think they are the ones that we should watch their, you know, how they have their stuff set up.
Okay.
One of my questions to you is, would you be willing to put foundation on the chopping block?
What for what?
Because I personally don't believe Barbadians in general, even though we all should be on board, will be willing to offer up Harrison College, Camomere, Foundation, and most of the older secondary schools to the process of having all the schools across the island being fitted out equally, and people go to where they live and be handled with, I think that's like, for instance, like with Finland.
Right.
It's across the board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a set standard. You have tests, but they're not released to the public. It's only used to assess where the children are and where they need to move to.
Right. I can give you very quick and easy answers to your questions. I would start with asking you the question, why is this assessment called 11 plus necessary in the first place?
Well, I don't feel it's necessary. Trust me, I believe that I suffered from it. So I don't need
to. If it's not necessary, then we can basically do away with it. You're asking me about a replacement. And I've always said to people who come with this argument that I cannot dispose of the 11 plus until I have a replacement, that I'm trying to understand, why do I need to have a replacement? Why do I need an assessment other than to determine what the strengths and weaknesses of a student are? And those strengths and weaknesses should be assessed on an ongoing basis, not to punish them or penalize them, but to ensure that you can offer the child the kind of support it needs as it goes forward along its chosen path. So I'm unfortunately not understanding that question as to whether or not foundation would be on the chopping block. We need a radical change in education. And to the best of my knowledge, the person that is at the head of that conversation, the two people that we've heard talking about disposing of the 11 plus, one of them went to school at Queen's College, and the other one went to school at Foundation. And I think that both of those individuals understand that ultimately the process that got them into those schools is a process that would change fundamentally if we did away with 11 plus. Sir, I will always love Foundation. It don't matter. I will always consider Foundation to be the leading educational institution in the region. And it's as simple as that. Whether persons get into Foundation by virtue of the marks that they got, like me, or they get into Foundation because they live in the area of Christchurch, like Bobby Morris did when he went to Foundation, it's not going to change my love for that institution. But I also think that there's a far greater fundamental issue. I mean, I'd be talking foolishness on the radio about Foundation. I mean, I think the people know that I am progressive-minded enough to understand that it's just not about that. But I think we have to get beyond the fact that we say we want to preserve a space at college and a space at Foundation and a space at Common Mirror. And we need to get to the point where we are sacrificing, we understand we are sacrificing the educational system behind a set of elitist nonsense. And we got to get past that because we are adults. We are not children anymore. We have to move past that foolishness. And I am.
Challenge that we need to, that the people need to be educated on.
So, sir, don't you think that we as a society have a capacity to do that?
I believe that we need to. I don't know. It's a challenge working out if Barbadians want to let go of this elitist thing.
Sir,
because
listen.
They don't understand what's going on globally.
They don't understand a lot of things, but you know what? That's where leadership comes in. And I make the point all the time. Look, in the 1980s, Barbados became the first country in the region that had legalized abortion. Barbados was a leader in terms of the Family Law Act, offering benefits to people who were born out of wedlock. We led in that regard. And we led in the context of a highly conservative society that found this kind of thing abhorrent. And a church that was hankering and carrying on and saying it wasn't something that you should do. We also led regarding many other major social initiatives. I believe that Barbados is one of the first countries in the region that had a national insurance system, right? And we led in that regard as well. So my sense is that we as a society can change. I know that in many instances, changes are not popular, but that's the reason that leadership is absolutely important. Leadership can carry us in places where otherwise we would fear to tread.
Agreed. I would just want that when the transition happens, that we try to, you know, have as much information as possible and make the transition as smooth as we can with, you know, as few hiccups as possible.
You remember when Days of Our Lives ended?
Oh, I think I drank a lot when it ended. I was quite happy.
I think I was quite happy too.
Because I think it pulled down Barbados' moral standard.
Sir, listen, I was happy the day that Days of Our Lives ended, but I had always been told they got a lot of things that will never change in Barbados. They will never stop beating the children. They will never end Days of Our Lives. And they would never end 11+. And
well,
I was always told that that was a sacred cow. Well, no, they're still beating the children, but they're beating them less.
Yeah.
And as a person who studies social change, I am confident that the 11+ is a corner that we as a society can turn. And 10 years from now, we will be looking back saying, well, what really all this conversation was about?
Yes,
because in the same way that we have turned corners regarding many other things.
Right, and because the goal of the educational system is to be able to put out good citizens who are adaptable, because the world is changing. Today, I might be a doctor, and then tomorrow I might not be, because somebody built a system where 20 patients can walk into a unit, be plugged into it, and can spit out information, tell me what is exactly wrong with them. Mm-hmm. So how many doctors do you believe you're going to need when you have a system like that?
I mean, that's a fairly sophisticated argument, but I think that my greater problem with 11+ is the damage that it is causing to
a
generation
of
children.
Because the reality is that people don't seem to understand that the majority of students are left behind.
Yeah. Because we are saying that 20% of the people who get into good schools, we're taking care of, and that the rest are being dumped, literally.
Yeah, they can work it out.
And they say, you know, we can throw you all on one side. If two or three make it to the top, great. But, you know, the rest of them could do what you got to do. But we're taking care of the top 20%.
Yeah,
we have a prime minister, thankfully, who has been through that system and has done well. She's been well-educated, the best primary school, the best secondary school. She went to one of the best universities in England. And ironically, she comes to a realization that something got to change, because the opportunities that she had, everybody could have. There's no reason why every school can't be a good school.
Right.
And listen,
and
that was like
a
pearl of wisdom dropping from the lips of someone when I heard her saying that. And I was like, but what it is that this middle-class girl understands this reality? And we got working-class people that are in the highest echelons of society that can't get it.
And the thing about it is that where they don't get it, and I don't understand it, it does not limit the ones that are extremely bright. It just means that everybody else gets the help they need, so that we as a country can put out world-class citizens across the board.
You know what will change, though, sir? What I suspect will change is that we will have a far more active private school system than we currently have.
And that makes it extremely hard on those parents. Now, there's some parents who sacrifice so much.
No, what will happen is that a lot of middle-class people now who send their children to QC and AHC will put their children in private school because they don't want their child in school with a set of
people. Oh, you mean from that end. Okay,
right.
Yes.
And to me, if that's what they want to do, fine. But my thing is that it does not place a burden on the society. Because right now, society is being taxed to pay for an elitist education for some people, which I think is foolishness. So if we get to a stage where they are not comfortable sending their children to public school, and they do like they do in the United States and the United Kingdom, to send them to private school, they pay for it. That's fine.
Yes. The other thing is that it has an advantage of lessening the burden, I think, on some schools, whereas some schools seem to end having numbers of a lot of children that have challenges to deal with, which I think when we go across the board, each school will have a smaller number of persons with challenges to deal with, and it'd be more manageable to the schools and the teachers.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you're making progress there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I am with you in that. I think that it can happen, and I do believe that with leadership, all things are possible. With leadership, all things are possible. I remember you remember when they introduced the jam busting?
Yes.
Right. And it was a massive change. People accepted it and they moved on. Yeah. And, you know, a breathalyzer testing is coming. And I mean, I was in a bar on Friday, and, you know, as usual, you're drinking, you're driving, but you drink and don't realize that, you know, this is something that you need. And then somebody said to me, you realize this thing has started, so you can't drink no more. I think that that's something that we will also adjust to. So the 11 plus is a huge change. It will take some doing, but I feel that people like you that know better, people like me that know better, we have to be out there on the front line as field marshals trying to get public opinion to move in a particular direction, because it's not going to be an easy battle.
Me and you need to go and do the research. Everybody has a cell phone to put up foolishness. Go and do the research and check the indexes for what measures education and stuff worldwide, and check the countries that are doing well and the systems that they have.
As you said in the beginning, you correctly pointed out that the Swedish system, it was?
Yeah, all those Nordic countries, Finland, Sweden, all of them have...
They don't know about 11 plus.
Yeah, they don't know about 11 plus. And they're high up on human development index and education and all this stuff. And actually, their students spend less hours in school. You know, I remember an interview that Jack Moy did, the guy from Alibaba, to ask him about, you know, the internet development and data and if he believes that we need more education in order to keep up with AI and, you know, more mathematics in school. He went and said, no. Mathematics don't really deal with creativity. We need more music and arts and stuff like that develop the creative side of the brain.
Yeah.
Once some person develop creativity, that part will come automatically. We will be able to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this thing about having to do more, you know, more hours in school and stuff like that is more about the quality of the education rather than more hours.
Mm. Sir, it was good chatting with you. I would love to have continued the conversation a little further, but I am mindful of the fact that the program ends at 1 o'clock today. So any parting words from you, sir, or we can move on?
No, we can move on.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Gentlemen in St. Peter, I have a problem with you and the person who says the creation story is nonsense. You cannot prove it. So or not, my thing is sheer complexity of plants and animals. Something or someone has to be created, have created them. You think that a computer or motor vehicle could have happened by chance. Anything you all don't understand, you think is nonsense. I have my own views on whether or not your views are nonsense, but this is not the place or the time. Dr. Brastocks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir. How are you, Alvin? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
I can call you Alvin, right? I don't have to call you Mr. Anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't
Alvin,
think...
a.k.a. Rum and Coke. My apologies, sir. Carry on.
I noticed since the 25th of May 2018 that if I got this with Alvin, ask you anything, you have the art of leaving it outside your stamp all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a left-hander or a right-hander?
Right-hander.
You're a right-hander.
Mm-hmm. I am not a cricketing person, though, so the off-stamp thing didn't already...
This is to get to the point that I want to raise.
Mm-hmm.
As a right-hander, you have the art of putting your left foot forward, and don't mind how much the ball cut back into you, it never set you off-stamp. You're leaving every delivery, certain deliveries outside the off-stamp. Something that you never really did before election.
Mm-hmm.
You will still attack issues of the day, things that you believe would affect the country, what the ministers and the prime minister was doing wrong, was on your lips every Tuesday and sometimes on Friday. Now I'm going to ask you a little one here that I don't believe you can left outside the off stamp, because if you leave this, you can clean both of you. Miss On decided your favorite girl last week. There was an issue. And she said she was driving in a van passing Bay Street, and she saw a property surrounded with chain fence. You remember that?
I didn't remember, but I'm willing to take your word for it.
Okay. Now, this property is the property between the Olay Ward and the building next, you know, it's like a car park.
It's Copacabana.
Right. Yeah. You know the spot.
I know the spot, yeah.
Facing Jamus Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She is it. Then a gentleman who is very, I would say, involved in looking back at culture, a diehard BLP. I heard him discussing it. And he was complaining that some development going on Bay Street that even gaps, places that you could walk, is getting taken up and things like that. You remember, Mr. Martin?
I'm willing to tell your word for it again.
Yeah. So you don't hear these things?
No, I'm probably okay, wasn't able to listen.
Let me move on. After Ms. On decided to make that statement, I think, a couple of years after, I heard a person with a voice like our Prime Minister. Sound everything like our Prime Minister. So I don't know who she is, but sound like our Prime Minister. And the lady said, whoever put that fence there got to move it, got to come down.
It was
People
Prime
should
Minister.
Be able to get to the beach.
Right. It was the Prime you Minister.
Heard a lady, you heard a lady saying it?
It is in the newspaper today. It's reported that the Prime Minister said it.
Okay. Right. So you know it's the Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister apparently said it. She made the comments at the... You were listening to the thing, right? Ideas Forum.
To be very, I noticed in Barbados since the 25th of May 2018, although you speak the truth, you've got to be very careful. You get caught and you'll be accused. What I'm saying is, as you say in today's paper, there's, you know, I mean, so you're playing deliveries now. You're leaving them. You're playing. You're batting. I'm bowling and you're batting.
I'm about to hit a six.
Okay. Is it true that on the 31st of December last year, that property was sold?
Sir, I do not know.
You told me you read the article.
I read the article. The article said that there was a sale of the property and there's some disagreement between the two owners. But I am not familiar with the details.
Tell me it was sold and it's a distribute. Now, Mr. Wickham, I tell you now that you're going to get clean bowl. How it could be sold and is a dispute. It was sold on the 31st of 2019.
I don't know. It's possible.
I can ask you a question. Who sold it?
BTI.
Who is BTI?
It said that the BTI sold
you
the land.
Barbados
Tourism Investment Authority.
You are educating.
Sold the land for $4 million in a section of Bronx Beach, so where the company was also recently planted several trees.
It was sold by a division of government, right or wrong?
Well, BTI is a division of government, or BTI is a statutory corporation?
Oh, it's not part of government.
I really don't know what it is, but I don't know if it's necessarily...
Wait, Mr. Vickham. Yeah. I tell you...
BTI has a board and all this kind of thing.
You went school long. Long.
No, but not regular.
Wait, listen. You went school long. But I want to understand. I went to the University of King Street in Richmond.
I used to play truant from school.
And let me tell you, the teachers at those two institutions, and I hear it's still going on today, this teacher to think and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're giving me the impression that property was sold by enough to do with government?
All right. What exactly is the point that you're trying to make? You have a difficulty with the fact that the Prime Minister has made comments on it, or you have difficulty with the fact...
What comments she made? Tell me what she said.
The impression that you're giving me, and I'm trying to walk you through this quickly because, of course, we don't have a lot of time.
Quickly, no.
Right.
Because I think...
No, because it's everybody.
I hear you.
But the point that I think you're making is that Ms. Undecided had issues with the blockage and nobody didn't take her on. And know that the Prime Minister has issue with blockage, it's a problem. And you're trying to understand how can a Prime Minister who would have approved the sale be having issues with the sale. Is that correct?
No, you're speaking. I'm listening to you and the people about it.
No, but I'm trying to understand what the concern is. All right, will you tell me then what your concern is?
I know, but the Prime Minister, I told you a lady's voice That song.
Come off it. Let's talk. Let's talk frankly. There's an article in the paper that is speaking to the Prime Minister.
Are you saying to me that last week a voice that came out giving I've only heard on the radio, you read it in the paper, but I heard the voice on the radio. And the impression I got was what was going on was wrong and the fence got to come down. And now I learned that less than 2 months ago, the same government sold the land. Well, what's going on in Barbados, Mr. Wickham?
I don't know if I could. Maybe the person that you need to speak to is the Prime Minister herself.
No. Let me tell you what's going on.
No, but you see, Alvin, my challenge is that I'm trying to understand. You said that you're bowling me a googly or a bunkser or whatever
I didn't call him anything.
Right. You said that the delivery can go a parcel on
the
outside.
If you leave this one outside the office, you can get clean balls.
But no, I will leave it because I don't understand the question or the ball that you're bowling.
I want to know, Mr.
Give
Wickham.
Me a beamer. Let me dispatch it effectively. Down to the covers.
Someone that says.
Or place it over the roof.
Listen, Mr. Wickham. Someone that is said got a degree in political science.
Mm-hmm.
Should a leader of a country come and give the people of Barbados the impression that they know nothing about how to defense for that?